Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program off and running. Midweek edition. It is Wednesday, September 11th, 2024. This is the 23rd anniversary of the terrorist attacks on America. Let us never forget that dark day in American history. And of course, this is one of those days that you will always remember if you're of a certain age, where you were that horrible, fateful morning. We're at the Buckmaster Show, and we are in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station 1030 KVOI, The Voice, worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. For our telephone interviews, the live line, which is 790-2040. And of course, folks are always open, willing to call. We hope they do. Presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's get things rolling now with our contributor on health, Dr. Victoria Mazes. Dr. Mazes is the founding executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona, where she is a professor of medicine and public health. She's internationally recognized as a leader in integrative medicine and committed to helping individuals lead healthier lives and in pioneering change efforts that solve the American healthcare system challenges. Together with her team at the center, she created and implemented educational programs that have trained thousands of physicians, nurses, and other healthcare professionals and impacted the care of millions of people. She's a highly sought-after speaker. She's the editor of the Oxford University textbook, Integrative Women's Health, and the author of Be Fruitful, The Essential Guide to Maximizing Fertility and Giving Birth to a Healthy Child. Dr. Mazes co-hosts a popular podcast with Andrew Weil. And she has also been named one of the world's 25 most intelligent optimists by Ode Magazine. You can find out more about her at the Weil Center for Integrative Medicine website, or you can follow her on X at Dr. Mazes. Dr. Mazes, how are you?
I am doing well. Thank you, Bill.
Are you really that much of an optimist? Caught you off
Thank
guard.
Thank goodness
there.
I am. Yeah. Because there's a lot that we could, look at the world with kind of darker glasses. But, it turns out actually that people who have a more positive outlook have better health. So we should all work on our outlook.
Well, it's a good way to be. And I think even if you're a lean toward pessimism, everyone can use a little optimism, a little more optimism in their lives. One thing we cannot use a little bit more of, Dr. Mazes, are ultra-processed foods. We've talked about this before on the show, but there's a new study that may offer some very big clues into which of the ultra-processed foods may be worse than others.
Yes, so this just came out the end of last week, and it looked at 10 different food categories. And the ones that really stood out at being really increasing the risk of heart disease and strokes fell into two categories. The first was sugar-sweetened beverages. No huge surprise there. We've been talking for a long time that soda, fruit punch, they're just not good for you. And so that was one category. And the other, I think it's going to disappoint a lot of people, but it's processed meat, poultry, and fish. So that includes bacon and hot dogs. It's things that are breaded, like breaded fish products, chicken sausages, salami. These are also highly processed with nitrites and nitrates and flavorants and all sorts of chemicals that are introduced to increase the shelf life or to enhance the flavor and make the food what we call hyper palatable, which is just what it sounds like. You just can't stop eating it because it's so yummy.
Have one chip and that will lead to a whole bag before
you and me both. You and me both. I have to say my strategy is I don't buy them.
Yeah, that can happen to me with some cookies. Surprising, maybe it isn't surprising, but almost 75% of the entire U.S. food supply kind of falls into these ultra processed food category.
Yeah, and that is probably a huge contributor to the poor health that many people in our country experience. So I really want people to understand what ultra-processed means. And that classification comes from something called the NOVA classification. So ultra-processed foods are essentially industrialized foods. In other words, you really can't make them yourself in your kitchen. I mean, that's really one way to differentiate them. So, for example, you know, you can't really make Pringles, to pick on a brand, potato chips, you know, in your kitchen, the way they perfectly, you know, line up. People sometimes do make potato chips by cutting potatoes and salting them and frying them. That's not an ultra-processed food. But when you buy, you know, the can of chips, or you buy the Doritos that have all of those additional flavorants and, you know, things that just really have that hand continuing to go in again and again. Things like energy drinks. You know, again, you might have a cup of coffee at home. You might have a strong cup of tea, but you don't have something that has all of these additional chemicals. Some of the instant foods like instant soups or the instant desserts. Again, they're not something you could make yourself at home. And so that is one of the ways to recognize them.
Surprisingly, there are healthy, and put that in quotes, some foods like whole grain breads, breakfast cereals, flavored yogurts that are included here. This is a little surprising.
Yeah, it surprised me too, but I want to say I'm not sure it's a great idea to eat these either. They were less associated with heart disease, but earlier this year, the British Medical Journal looked at almost 10 million people in a what we call a meta-analysis. They reviewed 14 different studies and pooled them, looking at that NOVA classification. And they didn't just look at cardiovascular disease. They also looked at anxiety, depression, asthma, sleep. So they looked at a lot of the other things that ultra-processed foods seem to impact. And so, yes, you know, some of those foods seem to not be as connected or associated with heart disease, but I still would worry about some of these other areas like anxiety, depression, sleep. There was some evidence for inflammatory bowel disease and for non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So these chemicals that are in industrialized food that really makes them yummy. I mean, that's why the food manufacturer are putting them in, is to make it very palatable. Turn out to have these negative health consequences. So when you see natural flavors, you know, we as Americans kind of like that word natural, and we think, oh, that's going to be from, you know, strawberries giving it the strawberry flavor, or it's going to be from, you know, coffee maybe giving it the coffee flavor. But actually, flavors can be from chemicals made in a lab that produces flavorants, and natural doesn't really have a meaning in our country. There's not a set of rules when you can use that term. Colors, you know, we like things with colors, and there's all of these dyes that are artificial, and, you know, there's more and more evidence showing the risks of them, especially, I would say, to children. There are food additives like hydrogenated fats and modified starches, and these all have these unhealthy effects that we want to avoid. So ideally, not so easy to do when 70% of our food is coming from ultra-processed, but we want unprocessed food. So that's going to be things like a nut, you know, a seed, brown rice or white rice, vegetables, fruits, mushrooms, whole grains like whole oat or wheat berries, things that are fresh, like a fresh piece of meat or chicken or fish or other kind of seafood that, again, is, you know, direct from the animal and hasn't been reprocessed to turn it into something else. Eggs and beans and legumes like lentils, chickpeas. So it's not like there's nothing to eat, but we want to eat things as close as possible to how they start out.
The ultra-processed foods, they come under the oversight, I would assume, of the government. Are they keeping an eye on some of these chemicals? I hope.
Well, that's a really good question. And I think, you know, some of them really are not being carefully tracked.
Yeah.
And there are people who would like our government to have a more active role. I mean, there have been little movements on this, like New York City some years ago limited like the size of drinks, and sometimes there's some extra taxes. But it's really notable that some of these foods are really inexpensive because we subsidize. So, for example, we subsidize corn, and that's what's in high fructose corn syrup. So it makes a big bottle of soda cheaper than a big bottle of water. We subsidize soy. So then soybean oil shows up as kind of a cheap fat in many of these foods, and they, you know, hydrogenate it, and that gives it a long shelf life. So not only is the government not helping us, it actually may be pushing us in the wrong direction because of food subsidies to agriculture.
All right, we'll take a break right here. We'll have more with Dr. Victoria Mazes, the founding executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
On average, the Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit qlmc.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things. Zocalo Village Studios, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. With us on the live line, we're always delighted to hear from our contributor on health once a month, Dr. Victoria Mazes, founding executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona, where she is also a professor of medicine and public health. We have an epidemic in this country, and it's called loneliness. At any moment, Dr. Mazes, the research indicates pretty much half, one out of every two Americans, experience measurable levels of loneliness. This is a big problem.
Yeah, and actually it's one that our Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Smirti, has really taken on. He wrote a beautiful book a few years ago called Together, and he really has shown a light on loneliness as a very significant health issue. He points to some data that shows that when people feel lonely, it increases their risk of heart disease by 29%, their risk of stroke by 32%, that when you experience loneliness, it's equivalent to smoking up to 15 cigarettes a day. And, you know, I'm sure listeners won't be surprised to hear that loneliness really increased during the pandemic.
What are some of the other triggers for loneliness? One obvious that at least I've experienced, of course, would be the loss of a loved one, but it could be a job, maybe moving. Health or financial considerations?
Absolutely. Some years back, Dr. Murthy wrote an interesting editorial where he described the story of one of his patients. And he said that this man had had, you know, kind of a modest blue-collar job. He won the lottery. And he became lonely. And what happened? He, you know, of course, was able to quit his job. He moved into a big house in a gated community. And then he actually said winning the lottery was one of the worst things that ever happened to me, because he lost his whole social life and didn't develop a new one. And Dr. Murthy actually described his own sense of loneliness when he was replaced as Surgeon General under a new president, and you know, that he was no longer connected to his work colleagues because he no longer was in that position, but he had neglected his friends over the early years of being the Surgeon General. So you describe finance, you describe job change, you describe the loss of a spouse or a loved one. But, you know, the other thing that's really interesting is that there's a difference depending on education. And so people who have a high school diploma or less actually spend less time in community groups or sports leagues or hobby groups than people with a college degree. It could be because they're working two jobs and they just don't have the same time. It could be because, for whatever reason, they don't think it's quite as important. And so there's some statistics that show that between 1990 and 2024, the percent of high school graduates who have zero friends is 24%.
Oh, my gosh.
Zero.
You're saying zero, not one friend.
Exactly. Not one person they could turn to when they have something wonderful to confide or something really difficult happens in their lives.
Oh, man, that is so sad. So we need to we need to strengthen certainly our social infrastructure, for one.
I agree. I think it's something we need to pay more attention to. And, you know, teleworking obviously has its upsides, but you may lose the contact that you have with a work community. Of course, there are other ways people can join a sports team. You know, that creates community. They can volunteer. That creates community. They may have a hobby that they like. They may have something they like to do recreationally, like go hiking and join a hiking group. So there are free ways, you know, things that don't cost any money at all to work on improving your life. And even the internet can help us here. You know, there are meetups where groups of people with the same interests can come together. There are apps that have been designed to help people build even close friendships. For example, there are apps that ask you a bunch of questions about what you're most interested in and then pair you with two other people to create little friendship groups of three. So I think this is something we have to pay attention to.
And, you know, here at work and in the workplace, somebody is always struggling. That's part of the human condition, of course, Dr. Mazes. So that person that's struggling, maybe check in on them a little more often at work and sit down with them and say, you know, anything I can do to help.
That's beautiful advice. Befriending, you know, making a greater effort to befriend those who are in need.
How about some other strategies? I know you mentioned that the internet actually, you know, technology could help us, but it also can have some dangers too. You know, we all want friends on, and we like that on Facebook, getting likes, but there's a whole interpersonal, it doesn't feel real personal is what I'm trying to say.
Yes. So I think that that is absolutely true, that one of the things that most social scientists believe is contributing to loneliness are these Facebooks and Twitters and ways in which there's a false kind of connectedness, but it's not live and in person in which you're really, you know, spending time with another human being. When you and I were together last month, we talked about the importance of physical touch. Well, you can't get that on the internet. You can't touch someone on the shoulder or on the arm and, you know, wish them well, give them a hug. And there is also this very strange way in which the likes have an effect on our brain. Some people liken it to gambling, where we get little dopamine rushes from having more likes. But again, it's a false reality, because those likes are not really your friends. You know, sitting with someone, talking to them, spending time together, sharing a meal, going for a walk, those are real connections. The likes on a site are not.
Yeah, I mean, it is a huge problem, and you really shocked me with that about one out of four people could not even say they had one close friend.
Yes, so that was people who only had a high school diploma. People with college degrees do better. There it was one in 10. So it's still a meaningful number of people, but clearly a much smaller number of people. And that in both cases, those got worse over the pandemic. So it used to be that the percent of college graduates who said they had zero close friends was just 2%, if you go back into the 90s, and now it's 10. And it used to be that amongst high school graduates, it was just 3%. So we've definitely, you know, moved in a bad direction.
A lot of people have no idea who their neighbors are. Especially, you know, where I grew up in Illinois on the North Shore of Chicago, the homes were fairly close together. But, you know, up in the foothills, there's a little bit of space between our homes here, and we may not see our neighbors for weeks.
Well, that is true. And yes, you know, those older communities that had front porches and,
yes,
you know, people sat on their front porches and, you know, they greeted folks as they took a stroll in the evenings. There actually is one little internet solution for that. It's called Nextdoor. Again, it's a free community building within your neighborhood, so that, you know, you could find out if your neighborhood perhaps has a good babysitter and you have children, or they're selling their couch, or, you know, whatever, or if they've had a robbery, or if they've spotted a bobcat. That happens in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those kinds of ways in which you might have just let the person know, you know, if you're on a half an acre, or if you're behind a gate because you're in a gated community, then you have less opportunity to interact with your neighbors.
Dr. Victoria Mazes from the Weill Center for Integrative Medicine. How are things going as you transition now into the new building?
The new building is absolutely fantastic, and I would just really encourage listeners. We have more and more programming happening in the new building, and we would love to welcome the Tucson community now that we finally have a great place to host people. And so keep an eye on the website, which is the Andrew Weill Center for Integrative Medicine, and do come by and take a look for yourself.
And for listeners who do not know where is it?
So it is right near the medical campus, and it's at the corner of Mabel and Vine.
All right. And just keep an eye out. More and more activities are being posted, and just keep an eye out on the website. Dr. Mays, it's always a pleasure. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Dr. Victoria Mays is with us on the Buckmaster Show, and you can follow her. Her website at the Weill Center for Integrative Medicine, and also she is on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Dr. Mazes. All right, midway point of our midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. Coming up next on the live line, Joe Winfield will join us, the mayor of Oro Valley, and they just are celebrating over their 50 years as an incorporated community. We'll be right back with the mayor of Oro Valley after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business, zocalovillage.com, open daily, 53 years in business, and they have everything you could imagine for your garden and the outdoors on their 13-acre site at 3384 East River Road. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, and we are utilizing the live line exclusively today. Oro Valley celebrating 50 years since its incorporation as a town, and when it was incorporated, there were 1,200 residents living within about 2.5 square miles. Well, fast forward a half century, now it's nearly 50,000 people residing on about 36 square miles of a very pretty desert area, generally west of Oracle Road, north of Ina Road, and east of I-10. Let's welcome now on the live line Joe Winfield, the mayor of Oro Valley. Congratulations, Mayor. Half century, nothing to sneer at. That's pretty darn good.
Thank you, Bill, and greetings to your listeners. It has been a very momentous year for the town of Oro Valley, celebrating, as you've mentioned, our 50th anniversary.
You've got some big projects in the works. You did pass the tentative budget. I guess it's about $151 million. It's about a little less, I think, than last year. But you've got some capital improvement plans, correct?
We do. Each year, our budget includes investments for capital projects. This past year, there's been a significant investment in our parks and recreation, primarily Naranja Park, but also other park facilities. But at Naranja Park, we've invested nearly $23 million. And what has resulted is just simply a stunning recreation facility for our residents and others who come to the park. We've added a splash pad, pickleball courts, multi-use fields, a bike pump track, a skate park, a remote control field, and of course the associated infrastructure, about 400 additional parking spaces and multi-use path that goes from Tangerine to Naranja. And it's beautiful. I usually am in the park each day. I love going in the evening. The fields are full. There's kids at the splash pad, people playing pickleball. The bike pump track has just been incredibly popular. And it's just wonderful to see so much activity at the park.
Oro Valley started off as a bedroom community and quickly expanded to business. You've got quite a business footprint, don't you, Mayor Winfield?
We really do, Bill. Of course, we're so pleased to have Roche Tissue Diagnostics. They're our number one primary employer. They have about 1,800 employees. I was just visiting with the Oro Valley Hospital administration staff earlier this week. They employ about 700 individuals. Was reviewing some of the new businesses that have come into Oro Valley this past year, over two dozen. Stacks Book Club, which has become a very popular gathering place for book readers, and they also serve coffee and other items. Brian's Bike Shop is right off of the Huckleberry multi-use path. He opened his doors, providing bike services, and numerous other businesses have opened this past year. We have about 700 businesses in Oro Valley.
Law enforcement's such a big piece of the pie up there. The town of Oro Valley does commit one-third of its general fund to police, and people, you know, they want a safe place, don't they, Mayor?
Absolutely. That's always been a high priority for the town of Oro Valley. our residents have always held a high regard for public safety and for the men and women who put on the uniform each day and literally put their lives on the line. I had the pleasure of joining some of our officers this morning and participating in the 9/11 Tower Challenge at the Tucson Convention Center. And of course, there were many first responders there from the departments from around the region and fire departments. And I just am always impressed with the caliber of these men and women who serve our community. And the Oro Valley Police Department really sets themselves apart. They're just the consummate professionals. One thing I get a kick out of, this was a few years ago, we had an officer that lateraled over from another department, and he said that he was learning to smile. Meaning, there's just we have an expectation here in Oro Valley. We have a police department that's very community oriented, and you know, our residents love our department, and our department loves the community.
As the mayor of Oro Valley, you do have a seat at the table on the 9-member Regional Transportation Authority Board, which is trying to craft the RTA Next program, you know, as the RTA gets ready to expire here in about a year and a half. How are we doing in that regard? I know there was a meeting last week. Did you get the compromise that some were hoping for, Mayor Winfield?
There was a special meeting, Bill, that was held last week. There's been significant progress that has been made. I think with any proposal or plan, there's, you know, things that you like and things that you don't like. But I believe that at this juncture, there's a plan that's coming into a place that will then go out to the public. And I think we're all anxious as members of the board to get a proposal out to the public to get their input about what's being proposed in terms of the different transportation corridors, the different other recommendations of investment in terms of safety and environment, transit. And so I think at this stage where we have a package that will soon go out to the public for their review and comment.
What do the people of Oro Valley want when it comes to transportation?
Well, that's a great question, Bill. I think the question that Oro Valley residents, so we have about 13,000 residents that leave Oro Valley each day to go to work. And of course, they go to a variety of places, but we have many who Raytheon is an employer. Many go to downtown Tucson, Caterpillar, and other office areas in downtown, the University of Arizona. I think what my residents are going to be asking is, how does this plan improve my commute time? Can I get to work sooner? Can I get to work more safely? I think that that's going to be the bottom line. We also have a very popular Dial-A-Ride program where transit overall has been in the decline in terms of ridership. That certainly isn't true in Oro Valley with our Dial-A-Ride transit program. It's had increasing ridership, and so that's been extremely popular. And of course, the funds coming from RTA have helped make that possible.
Mayor Winfield, always a pleasure. Thank you. Good catching up with you. Thanks for what you do in the community.
Thank you so much, Bill. Really appreciate the opportunity and always look forward to it.
Thank you very much, Mayor Joe Winfield, the mayor of Oro Valley. It's the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. We're going to talk bugs. Mosquitoes love me, unfortunately. It must be my blood type, but I was eaten alive, it seems like, this summer. Some weren't. Maybe they don't have the blood type that the bugs like, but Gene Gene Hall he's kind of the bug expert, and he's on the live line coming up next.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. 2006, Pima County voters approved the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year Regional Transportation Plan, half-cent sales tax. They're both effective through June 30th, 2026. The region to receive continued funding for another 20 years. RTA is developing a new plan and tax extension for voter consideration. Public input will be key. Receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development. Visit rtanext.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. All summer long, we've been saying it's going to be 10 degrees cooler over in Silver City. Well, I just checked. It's 100 degrees in Tucson, and it's 87 in Silver City. So it's over 10 degrees cooler, and it's cooler because of the elevation over there. This is a perfect time of year to take a three-hour road trip over to Silver City. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. And did I say it's only about a 3-hour drive east of Tucson. Wow, the mosquitoes love me. I don't know what it was, but this summer seemed like it was unusually active for the bugs. Let's go on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management to the bug expert, Gene Hall, manager of the University of Arizona Insect Collection, which features approximately 2 million specimens, making it a cornerstone of insect-related research in Arizona. Hall's research focuses on evolutionary biology of insects, and he also provides insect and other arthropod identifications as part of the Arizona Cooperative Extension's Insect Diagnostics Clinic. Gene, how are you, sir?
Doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me on today. I appreciate it.
You are a friend of mine on Facebook, and my condolences. You lost your little companion animal recently.
Oh, yes, I did. Thank you very much. Yeah, it was a big loss, but had a great adventure together for 13 years.
Yeah, gone over the Rainbow Bridge. All right. Yeah. Was this an unusually active season for bugs, the summer thunderstorm season?
Well, yes and no. Some bugs were out in big numbers this year, and some weren't. We had, fairly good rains during the winter time, and with warmer weather in the winter and the rain, sometimes the bugs get an earlier start than usual. But also, it's been pretty hot this summer, too. And so that also has an impact on the populations, especially if we don't get the consistent regular monsoon rains that we used to get when I first moved here over 40 years ago. And so some insects did really well. Others maybe came out later than usual, weren't around as long as usual, and maybe their numbers weren't so big. But there were some insects that actually did pretty well this year.
You know, there was one or two days we had a little like an outburst at our place in the foothills of these little winged creatures with a transparent white wing. What were those?
Well, there's a lot of small insects with transparent white wings. Some that do come out, though, in large numbers, especially before monsoon season hits, late spring, early summer, are false chinch bugs. And they can come out in very, very large numbers. They're mostly attracted to mustard plants and such and weedy things. And there's really nothing you can do about them. Whenever they show up in large numbers, you just have to let them do their thing, go their course. It'll eventually start getting too hot and too dry for them, and then their numbers will get knocked back. And so they're one of the insects that I usually get some of the first inquiries about when we transition from summer and springtime into summertime, because they're taking advantage of what food plant is available to them at the time.
How about mosquitoes? I was saying that they seem to be attracted to me. The certain blood types they do feed on, they're preferred, right?
Well, mosquitoes, we have a variety of different species here, and they have different activities and such. And yeah, some people do attract them more than others. I used to not be so attracted to mosquitoes a long time ago, but now I seem to get bit more often than I used to. And, a lot of this also has to do with the amount of moisture we have that's available for them to breed. A lot of this time it's artificially, introduced moisture that people either from watering their yards, water that's stagnating or sitting in the bottom of potted plants inside the little dish and stuff. It doesn't take much water for a mosquito to be able to breed and to grow as an immature stage. And so, but, when we have a lot of rain, it was actually kind of interesting monsoon this year, right? The storms were few and far between, but they were really big when they happened.
Yes.
So there was probably lots of bodies of water around that bumped up the numbers. But also, too, sometimes it could be something that's human caused by what we do and what we introduce into the natural environment with regards to aquatic habitats for them.
Bugs are so important, actually, to the ecosystem. The bats that come through a couple of nights a year, they really do they're on their way, and they love to feast on mosquitoes, right, Gene Hall?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
And they'll come through, and I've seen some of the feeders for the hummingbirds just be completely emptied in one night from when the bats come through.
Yeah, and a lot of people ask me, what good are mosquitoes, right? And, well, for one thing, they do provide a nutritious meal for other animals, and bats are a good example of that. So,
you want to talk a little bit about your upcoming insect festival. What's that all about, Gene Hall?
So we're having the insect festival this year, October 4th. It's from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and we're having it in the ENR2 building on campus as we've had for the last several years. And this year, We have some interesting presenting sponsors, Slow Food of Southern Arizona and Tucson City of Gastronomy. If you want to learn more about those, I suggest people go online to do so. And we're going to have kind of an interactive thing there with how pollinators are responsible for food sources locally and such. And there'll be some, I think there's going to be some performances associated with that. We also have some talks lined up in honor of Liz Bernays, who was our former department head in the early 1990s. She passed away recently. And if I remember correctly, Liz was the first woman hired as an entomology department head at a university in the United States, and she did that here. And so we're having some talks dedicated to her. And so it's just another great experience for families to come out. It's a free event. We usually get anywhere up to near 5,000 people within the five-hour period. One thing I did want to note is that in the past, parking has been free in the parking lot next to where we hold the event. But this year, the university is now charging parking for all campus garages. Mm. So the parking will cost there. There's going to be free parking across the street, if I'm right, from 6th Street from the event. But I just wanted to give people a heads up about that. We no longer have free parking available. But it's a wonderful event. I think it's one of the largest non-sports-related outreach events that the university does. Wow. And it's to, you know, educate the community about the great, wonderful diversity of insects and other arthropods in the region and how wonderful they are and great they are. And so it'll be this October, and I suggest everybody come. It's interesting to do this. We started this in 2011, and it's nice to see people return year after year and actually see the kids grow up and get older, but everybody's still here. People even like, you know, arrange their travel plans around being here for the Insect Festival when they want to see family or friends in town. I know my parents do, so they live in Louisiana.
There you go. All right, we're speaking with Gene Hall, manager of the UA Insect Collection. What makes Arizona one of the most diverse places in the world for the diversity of the ecosystems?
Well, if you think about it, Arizona's great, especially southeastern Arizona, but as a whole, it's just fantastic. We have everything from the low deserts to the mountaintops and everything in between. We don't have incredibly harsh winters like you see in other parts of the country. And a lot of insects and other arthropods and just organisms in general, plants and animals, have their northern extension of their population range from Mexico comes into Arizona. So it's basically, we just have these great, you know, conditions for them to be able to thrive and to do well. People come out here to look at insects, especially during monsoon season when the diversity is at its highest. And they come out here like they do for bird watching trips to look for insects out in the mountains and such. And so it's just one of the gems, you know, in the United States, North America in general, where we have such a large amount of diversity of insects and other arthropods here that it's a great place to be if you want to study insects or you just want to watch insects, look at insects, observe insects, whatever.
Gene Hall, always a pleasure catching up with you. Thank you very much, Gene.
Sure, Bill. Thanks for having me today. Look forward to talking to you again.
All right. Gene Hall, the manager of the University of Arizona Insect Collection. My goodness, they have nearly 2 million specimens in their collection. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Talking about tomorrow's show, the mayor will be with us, Mayor Regina Romero, in the first half hour, then our travel segment, our monthly travel segment with Bon Voyage Travels, Ryan Hansen. Then Friday, we've got the police chief. We'll be back with us, Chad Kazmar, on the Buckmaster Show. It'll be our Friday focus interview. So we've got couple of great shows still to do this week, but for now, that's going to wrap it up. Kathleen Wynn with Wynn Tucson is coming up next, right after CBS Network News. Bill Buckmaster and Tom Fairbanks wishing everybody well.